Press Law Center podcast for February 2009, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a champion for student voices, recognizing the essential role that a free press plays in a democratic society. The SPLC is committed to nurturing and protecting freedom for the next generation. For more information about the center's work, you can go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lomani, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. February 24, 2009 will mark 40 years since the Supreme Court handed down its landmark 1969 decision in the case of Tinker versus Des Moines Independent School District. The Tinker case was all about the courage of three young school children, John Tinker, Mary Beth Tinker, and Christopher Eckhart, who refused to be intimidated into giving up their constitutional rights. These three students advanced the legal rights of all of America's young people by the simple act of wearing black armbands to school as a silent show of support for a ceasefire in the United States war with Vietnam. They suffered long suspensions from school for standing up for their beliefs, but the Tinker and the Eckhart families pressed their point all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And in one of the most famous lines in all of American legal history, Justice Fortas wrote that the students were right, the school was wrong, and that the suspensions were a violation of the First Amendment. It can hardly be argued, he wrote, that either students or teachers shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. Well, even under the protection of the Tinker case, students continue today to face significant obstacles that prevent them from peacefully expressing their views at school. And as we'll talk about in a minute, the schools are struggling with the courts to figure out what it means to have freedom of speech at school when speech is on the internet and when school is over for the day. We're pleased and honored to be joined by State Senator Jamie Raskin of Maryland's 20th District. Senator Raskin is a constitutional law scholar with the Washington College of Law and American University, and he's the author of a terrific book, We the Students, that analyzes the impact of major Supreme Court decisions on the lives of young people. Senator Raskin, before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about the Marshall Brennan Project at American University and how that educates students about the importance of free speech?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. The Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project was created 10 years ago, and we started it with the support of the families of the late great justices Thurgood Marshall and William Brennan, both of whom were real champions of constitutional education of the public generally, but especially young people in school. So our project takes law students who've done well in constitutional law and who have shown an interest in public education and young people, many of whom are actually former teachers, high school teachers, and we send them into public high schools in Washington, D.C., in Montgomery County, Maryland, and they teach a full-blown course on constitutional law. And that was actually how I came to write my book, We the Students, Supreme Court Cases for and About America's Students, because the book is a collection of all the Supreme Court decisions that affect young people. So it includes locker searches, drug testing of student athletes, segregation, desegregation, affirmative action, sexual harassment in the schools, free speech in the schools, and so on. And we use that as a curriculum to get the kids engaged with the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and what the Supreme Court does. And, of course, they have lots of thoughts and feelings about all of these issues because they deal with their everyday lives.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wonderful program. Just to get us started, Senator Raskin, can you talk just not so much as a matter of constitutional law, but as a matter of educational practice and just good civics education? Why does it matter that students have a protected right to freedom of speech when they're in school?
Well, the school I like to think of as a mini community. And, you know, in an authoritarian society, in a fascist society, or in Stalinist society, it's not important that the kids have freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom to participate because they're being trained to become authoritarian subjects, to be bossed around. And so you wouldn't want them to have any freedom. But if we want people to grow up in a mature way and in a way that they're capable of participating in civic life as voters, as citizens, as speakers, as listeners, as participants in community, then we need to start when they're young, because if they can't do it in their teens, they're not going to be able to do it later on when they've got busier lives and more responsibility. So we want to create the habits of the heart that accompany being a citizen of a democratic society.
Well, as a practical matter, how much of Tinker is really left after what the Supreme Court said in the Hazelwood versus Kollmeyer case, which seems like it so dramatically lowered the bar and opened the door to much greater censorship of student newspapers, yearbooks, plays, and other types of school-funded speech?
Well, Hazelwood versus Kollmeyer was definitely a setback to the cause of student free speech rights, as was in a lesser way, a prior case called Bethel versus Fraser. But both of them, I think, can be pretty closely confined to a certain set of circumstances. Hazelwood involved censorship of a student newspaper where one student had written an article about the impact of parental divorce on kids in the school, and the other had written an article about teen pregnancy and what its effects are for kids who are in school. Both of them, I thought, were excellent articles, but the principal and then the Supreme Court deemed them basically inappropriate and unsuitable for a young audience on the dubious theory, I think, that students can handle seeing pregnant classmates walking around, but they can't handle an article that actually discusses the experience. But in any event, what Hazelwood said was that, Tinker had defined a free speech right for students, saying that students have First Amendment rights when they cross the schoolhouse gate, just like teachers do, so long as their speech does not constitute a material and substantial disruption of the educational process or a violation of the rights of other students. And that's a very broad and open free speech field that was created by the Supreme Court. But Hazelwood says, except if the student's speech is taking place in a student newspaper or yearbook or publication or activity, like perhaps a play, where the imprimatur of the school is placed on the expression. So if the school's name is attached to it, then the Tinker right doesn't apply. I think that that does take a very large bite out of Tinker, but I don't think it cuts the heart out of it, because the heart of it is still there, which is that as an individual student speaking in your own name, the student can't censor you or your black armband or your T-shirt without showing that your speech is really disruptive of the educational process.
Well, and one of the things about Hazelwood versus Kollmeyer that I think is important to point out is that it didn't erase the First Amendment status of those publications. It still places the onus on the school to come forward with what's called a legitimate pedagogical reason. So doesn't that suggest that, for example, the principal couldn't just say, I have a personal belief which contradicts your editorial, or I have a personal dislike of your opinion, or I don't like being criticized?
That's right.
Wouldn't those flunk the test even under Hazelwood?
That's right. I mean, under Hazelwood, the court has said that the school gets to be the editor of the newspaper for reasonable pedagogical purposes and objectives. So, if they do think that the material is somehow unsuitable for a youthful audience, then it can censor. That's the difficult bite of it. But the court is careful to say this cannot become the opportunity for viewpoint discrimination. I mean, a school could not say, we're going to allow editorials that favor the Republicans but not the Democrats, or we're going to allow pro-war but not anti-war editorials or op-eds to be written. So that is true. Even within, the school newspaper publication context, the school doesn't have totally free rein to discriminate. It just has a greater editorial voice to decide, what seems appropriate and fitting for an educational purpose and what not.
I want to ask you about a case that's going on today. It's sort of amazing that 40 years after Tinker, we're actually still fighting over the rights of students to wear black armbands as a peaceful method of political protest in school, which was the exact issue resolved by Tinker. There's a case you may be familiar with, Lowry versus Watson Chapel School District, in which a school in Arkansas is asking the Supreme Court to decide that students can be disciplined for wearing armbands in protest of a dress code requirement, because in the school's view, Tinker protects only protests of national political issues and not local school policies. What's your view on that? Should Tinker not apply to what the students did in Arkansas?
No, that seems to be a complete distortion of Tinker. I mean, there was nothing in Tinker that said it was limited to national political issues as opposed to local political issues or state political issues. I think the operative language was that it was a silent and nonviolent political statement, and that would seem to apply to a black armband worn in protest of a decision to fire a particular teacher or in protest of a dress code. I mean, it seems like a rather clever protest against a dress code, because it's saying, look, the Supreme Court has announced that we have a right to wear armbands to express our political opinion, even if it is somehow inconsistent with what you're saying the dress code is. Now, the Justice Fortas did say in Tinker versus Des Moines that the decision was about essentially symbolic political dress, and it did not apply to general rules of wardrobe and deportment. So, you know, you don't necessarily have a right to wear short shorts, or you don't necessarily have a right to wear a baseball cap in class. It comes down to whether you're intending to make a political statement with your clothing, and those kids definitely were intending to make a political statement. It was silent, it was nonviolent, it was passive, it clearly had a political message. So I think that the students, you know, if there's any fairness left in the land, will win that one.
Well, Senator, we read so much today about concerns over cyberbullying and over uncivil speech on the Internet. Do you think that the public still supports and values the free speech rights of students, or do you have a sense that the public feels students have too many rights and wants to see them reined in?
Well, you know, I guess I would sort of dodge the question by saying both. I think that, you know, the pendulum has swung back from the Bush years, when there was a real crackdown on a lot of civil liberties and, you know, a lot of people lost their way in terms of the Bill of Rights. I think people understand that the greatness of America lies in our Bill of Rights and in the ability of the people to have a political say and the right to participate. So I think people are coming back around on all of these questions about the Bill of Rights and civil rights and civil liberties. Having said that, at the same time, bullying is attracting a lot of attention, and I think people are rightfully concerned about it. I'm a father of three kids in school, and you know, bullying seems to me to fit right within the Tinker exception about violating the rights of other students. I mean, if you are really bullying someone and harassing them and making it impossible for them to learn, it's very hard to see how you have some kind of First Amendment right to do that in school. And I think that there's a broad social consensus about that, that you know, when your speech actually thwarts the very purpose for having school in the first place, which is allowing students to be educated and to develop their minds and their hearts, the free speech right ends at that point. And you know, I don't have any particular qualms about that reaction. I think that's the right way of thinking about things.
Well, it sounds like on this 40th anniversary of Tinker that you're fairly optimistic, though, that we're going to see another 40th anniversary, and that 40 years from now we'll be able to look back and say that Tinker's still the law of the land, Tinker's still good law, and there's still a Tinker level of protection.
Yeah, one reason I feel that is, you know, because of my book, I go out and I speak to a lot of high school kids, and Mary Beth Tinker is a complete rock star to these students, and Mary Beth Tinker is actually involved with our Marshall Brennan Constitutional Literacy Project, so I see her interact with young people. She represents to them not just the formal right of free speech, the idea that, you know, you have a right to speak up if you're not disrupting your class and its ability to move forward, but she also represents the actual hopes of young people that their speech will mean something and that they've got something to say. I mean, remember, Mary Beth Tinker spoke out as a passionate opponent of the Vietnam War. Right in the middle of the war, she took on not just her math teacher and the principal, but you know, President Johnson and the whole military-industrial complex, and she won in the Supreme Court. And so, you know, I think that the Tinker case is very firmly rooted in our constitutional and political culture now. It's sort of like the Miranda decision. There are justices on the court who have wanted to throw Miranda out the window, but because of the TV cop shows, it's so firmly rooted in the cultural soil of America that it's very hard to see it being thrown away. Well, I think Tinker has that kind of iconic status now. And if you look back over the 20th century, the Tinker decision is to the free speech rights of America's students what Brown versus Board of Education is to their equal protection rights. It is it's a kind of proclamation of the equal liberty of America's young people.
Well, that is a wonderfully optimistic note on which to end this discussion. So I will thank you for joining us, Senator Jamie Raskin. And I want to thank all of you out there for listening to the Student Press Law Center podcast for February 2009. And I invite you to check out our website, www.splc.org. And if you are a student journalist or a journalism advisor who has a question about your legal rights, you can call our hotline, 703-807-1904, or you can email us at splc@splc.org. Thank you again, Senator Raskin.
And the pleasure is mine.
Here's wishing all of you a happy and a free Tinker Day.